You're listening to the Arsenal for Democracy, forging and preparing a new generation for leadership. Now, here's your host, Bill Humphrey.
For 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. I'm coming to you on April 28th, 2014 from my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Nate, Greg, and I discuss the Israel-Palestine peace talks collapse, the Egyptian military dictatorship, and anti-Muslim hysteria. Then Daniel Fidler joins me to discuss Captain America 2. All that is coming up right now. Arsenal for Democracy is usually recorded in studio every Monday and is available for download on Wednesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it from WVUD.org on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio. You can also like us on Facebook. This is the Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line, as usual, from Maryland is Greg. Joining me in studio is Nate. We're going to be talking now about the breakdown in the Israel-Palestine peace talks and then some of the aftermath of that. Not a huge surprise that they fell apart. That's been pretty consistent for the past, I would say, almost 20 years at this point of peace talks. A lot of people were pretty much expecting them to fall apart. But the interesting thing was that there was some political movement on the Palestinian side that was unexpected, which is what finally triggered the talks to break down. And then Israel gets to walk away from them looking like they're not the bad guy to their own side, basically. Everyone else, I think, still there's a pretty broad consensus that Israel messed up a lot of the talks by continuing the settlement construction and all that kind of thing. But the Israeli position was that there was a political deal that will probably be short-lived, but who knows, between Fatah or the PLO in the West Bank and Hamas in Gaza Strip. Israel is willing to deal with Fatah and the PLO, and they pretty much have been willing to deal with them since, I think, the late 80s. But they have consistently not wanted to deal with Hamas because Hamas officially wants the destruction of Israel. Although I believe that the PLO also used to. They just haven't given that up yet on the Hamas side. But Hamas obviously being the political Islam, whereas the PLO being the secular side of the Palestinian issue. And geographically, they've been separate for a number of years now. So Israel doesn't want to deal with Hamas, doesn't want to deal with a unity government. I think worth noting that the PLO is not exactly democratically empowered to make decisions on the behalf of the Palestinians, nor have they ever really been. Some of the deals that actually created the electoral system and everything in the Palestinian Authority in the first place were brokered between the PLO and the Israeli government, again, without any sort of input from the Palestinian people. Basically, Israel has had a habit of saying, these are the people we're willing to deal with, whether or not they're representative. These are the people we're not willing to deal with, even if they are backed by a lot of voters and whatever. And they just say, okay, if you don't follow these rules, then we're not going to have talks. So that's what happened this time again. And then there was leaked reports that John Kerry may have used the A word, the apartheid description with regard to Israel or the Palestinian territories, unclear at this point, and suggesting that there was an apartheid comparison there or that they were on that road. And of course, that immediately triggered all the upset from the American groups that support Israel pretty unquestioningly in a very hawkish position, as we've talked about previously on the show. Greg, I wanted to get your thoughts on this breakdown in talks and the overall situation with regard to Israel and the territories.
Yeah, it just increasingly it seems, like you said, that I don't think anybody really thought that this was going to go anywhere because historically it hasn't gone anywhere. And again, also, as you said, it sort of seems like Israel is not really worried about brokering peace with the Palestinians as much as they are worried about looking like they're brokering peace with the Palestinians. So you deal with the people that you know are sympathetic or perhaps more sympathetic to you or more willing to work with you. So that in this case is the PLO. And you have them make decisions for all Palestinians everywhere. And then you say, look, we've made this agreement with Palestinians in good faith. And now because there is this radical Islamist other Palestinian organization in Hamas that will not abide by this agreement that we have reached, then, you know, we're forced to do X, Y, and Z. And so it really just seems like all of the discussion and the talks that Israel has been engaged in with the Palestinians, or a subset of the Palestinian government, governing bodies rather, that is extremely self-serving and mostly a PR campaign. I think the United States is in large part falling for it. I don't think that the rest of the global community is falling for it. But as you said, there are people in the United States that will support Israel doing pretty much anything. I mean, I'm having a difficult time thinking about something that would be beyond the pale that Israel could do that people that are really, really Israel supportive would not be on board. Which is scary. And I'm not saying that they would do something that would be that egregious, that everybody would be appalled except for this really religious, usually, subset of the American populace that is just sort of supportive of Israel no matter what. I'm becoming increasingly despondent that there's ever going to be any resolution to this within my lifetime.
Well, so I think also to that point, I think a lot of people are concerned that, and this is, as I understand it, we don't know the full context of Kerry's comments, but according to his State Department spokespeople, he was actually saying that it would be an apartheid state if there was a one state solution rather than a two state solution.
Oh, okay.
And that would be, you know, that he wasn't talking about Israel now and he wasn't talking about the Palestinian setup or whatever. He was saying that if there was a one state, that it would be, which, like, I don't really understand what the distinction is there, just because, I mean, it's like a semantics distinction, because if you're essentially saying that the system that already exists would be solidified under Israeli control and that they would then be dominating the government in the way that the apartheid rulers did, although, of course, they have a much larger share of the population.
It's a fine distinction, Bill.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think that there are always these distinctions made, especially in terms of international relations, when you talk about, you know, how the United States government was reluctant to call what was happening in Rwanda a genocide, so they didn't have to intervene. And
right.
I think that this is another one of these buzzwords that is apartheid. And if we stick our fingers in our ears and pretend that it's not happening, then we don't have to do anything about it. But if somebody was to actually look at the situation and evaluate it critically and say, like, oh, yeah, this sort of looks like South Africa, then it would probably force some action.
When you and I did the soda water segment, I had brought up this point, but then I think I ended up cutting it for time purposes. But I had mentioned about this thing where the Israelis had set up a separate bus line within Israel between two points. I forget what it was, but basically for quote unquote security reasons, they had one bus line for the Jewish citizens and one bus line for the Arab citizens, and the Arab Israelis, not the Palestinians. And that, I think it's a small example, but by definition, that basically is an apartheid system, because what apartheid means is that you keep everyone apart. That's the root of that word. But I think to my point about the one state versus two state solution and what is the situation now by default, I mean, if you look at the map, the Israeli settlements in the West Bank have metastasized so far that there's really very little left of the West Bank itself. It doesn't have territorial integrity, which in order to have a country, you have to have territorial integrity, and that's not something that they have. So I think at this point, a lot of outside people outside of this perennial let's go have some talks again process say, I don't think there is going to be a two state solution because there's no second state left to come into existence. It's basically going to be one big merge thing. And then the question is, are they going to be able to find a way to cooperate with each other? And I suspect that they're probably not going to be able to find a way to cooperate with each other, given that they have a very poor track record at the moment of managing relations with the Arab Israeli population, let alone the Palestinian population, as well as the Ethiopian Jewish population in Israel. They've shown a pretty bad record on that. And I think that's why if it does become a one state system, it is going to be kind of an apartheid rulership, which is going to cause all kinds of problems. Nate?
Bill, I'd just like to point out that you used the word metastasize and therefore compared the Jewish settlements to a cancer.
That's correct.
I would like to call you an anti-Semite for that statement.
So here are the insults that you can throw at me. Self-hating Jew. What else we got? I can't think of anybody.
Well,
else.
You're a Jewish anti-Semite.
Yes, that's right. I'm a Jewish anti-Semite.
But seriously, just reading the response by Abraham Foxman of the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, to Kerry's statement, I was actually a little surprised and a little disappointed because he didn't call him an anti-Semite. I was hoping for that. He did say, it is startling, deeply disappointing that a diplomat so knowledgeable and experienced about democratic Israel chose to use an inaccurate and incendiary term. Even if he'd used the repugnant language of Israel's adversaries and accusers to express concern for Israel's future. It was undiplomatic, unwise, and unfair. Such references are not seen as an expression of friendship and support. So, it's some good restraint not calling it anti-Semite there and really cheapening that term, which, you know, is actually a pretty serious issue. Going around willy-nilly calling writers and politicians anti-Semites does nothing good in the world. That's my opinion.
Nate and I are both from an area that's had some issues with the Anti-Defamation League in the past.
Not just that. Apparently, there are just like hardcore Likudniks that go to school committee meetings and get really upset and yell at my dad because apparently we don't teach our children to hate Arabs enough in our history curriculum in public schools.
I was going to bring that up.
Apparently, that's a really big deal.
I was going to bring that up in the next segment. So if you'll just hold that thought, we will circle back to the local school committee issues of Newton, Massachusetts in a broader context of the next segment. It's going to make a lot more sense. But to go back to the Anti-Defamation League, what I was starting to say was that there's a large Armenian population in Newton and then neighboring Watertown. For our non-Massachusetts listeners, you know of Watertown as the place that bomber guy went to.
Into the boat.
Yeah, he got into the boat. So that's the Watertown that we're talking about. But anyway, large Armenian American population there. The Anti-Defamation League, you know, has done some good works in reducing anti-Semitism and all that. However, they also have a very nasty history of denying the existence of the Armenian genocide. Basically, the known confirmed reason of why the ADL took that position, along with the Israeli government officially denying the Armenian genocide, was that until about 2005, 2006 or so, Israel's closest ally apart from the United States was Turkey.
Until they raided the Turkish ship and killed all those people on it. So.
Right. The relations...
That might have sabotaged relations a little bit.
Yeah, that was the ultimate breaking point between Israel and Turkey, but for a long time, they had been on the outs, you know, kind of declining relationship because of the Erdogan government and the AKP, which is the moderate Muslim government in Turkey, or formerly moderate, now increasingly extreme.
What's going on over there? That's a story for a different
episode. Yeah, that's for a different episode. But basically, the Israeli government was so closely aligned with the Turkish government and the Turkish military, which is very nationalistic and wants to deny their history of the Armenian genocide and all that. They essentially, all of the American Israel lobby groups backed up Israel's position of denying the genocide just so that they could preserve military relations with Turkey, which was a really messed up thing to do. So when the ADL guy is criticizing John Kerry for using the term apartheid and whatever and saying that, oh, he should know his history. Well, I'm sorry, but the ADL was trying to say there was no Armenian genocide for a long time. I don't know if they eventually changed their position because there was a whole controversy in Newton and Watertown about that. But, you know, like we've been saying here, a lot of this is about finessing your language and these international relations things. At a certain point, aren't we going to just look at the facts on the ground or whatever, which is just, this is a messed up situation that keeps on getting worse, and obviously the Palestinians shouldn't be firing rockets at people, but if you just really think about it, if any other country were doing the stuff that Israel does on a regular basis, the United States would probably be putting sanctions on them. I mean, like...
Russia.
Right, that, you know... They've, you know, immediately putting on sanctions on Russia, and, you know, you got your North Korea sanctions, etc. Israel is a country that, you know, worked with apartheid South Africa to develop nuclear weapons, and then...
Forgot about that for a bit.
Yeah, and then continually expanding the settlements, first as an intentional militarized housing policy, essentially to occupy by, you know, possession being 9/10 of the law, and then also creating a buffer of just having all these houses or whatever, and then it developed into this colonial thing. Even some of the origins of the Israeli state have a lot in common with colonial Europe. Grows out of this 19th century period in Europe, and even some of the Sephardic Jews who were living in Israel or then Palestine at the time were kind of being kicked to the side as the European Jews came in, because it was this sort of mentality of moving in and occupying everything, which, again, the Palestinians have also done many terrible things and blown up lots of people, and that's not good either, but that doesn't justify the Israeli response either, especially in recent years when the Palestinians have clearly been outmatched and have had essentially no support from any of the other countries. You know, it may have made sense when Israel was surrounded by all these major, regionally major military powers that were threatening them, but that is a long gone time period.
And more tank battles in the Sinai, you know, we just have asymmetrical warfare with Katyusha rockets and, you know, helicopters and SWAT teams from the Israelis.
Right. And at this point, Israel has developed the capacity to be able to just annihilate Palestinian communities from the air if any rockets are fired, which this is, the United States also does very problematic things with asymmetric warfare that are maybe disproportionate, as we've talked about on the show previously. But Israel basically attempting to colonize their neighbors with these illegal settlements and then throwing a tantrum when anyone calls them illegal settlements. I don't know what you're supposed to call them, but you can't just go build next door in these other areas. And we've stopped the policy of saying you can just conquer your neighboring areas. I mean, that's the whole deal we've got going on with Crimea right now, that those days are over. You can't just walk into the neighboring area and say, oh, this used to be ours and now it's ours again, and now we're going to take control of it. And there was this period where Israel was willing to walk back from where they were on this position, but then the Israeli left got destroyed, and then all the hawks came to power, and then the United States went through a phase of having presidents that were unwilling to be critical toward Israel. And as I think we've said previously on the show, the best thing that Israel could possibly have from the United States is critical support that comes with being willing to tell you when you're messing up, rather than just rubber stamping everything you do or looking the other way or waiting until the last minute and being like, oh, come on, man, you guys shouldn't be building those settlements. Oops, I guess that's the end of the peace talks again. And then wait another 6 years to reinitiate them. This endless cycle is not helpful. And I don't see where the end point is at this point. And then Israel making deals for final plans of how the territorial lines are going to be drawn, or trying to come up with a final peace plan with people who were last elected in 2005 and they haven't had elections since then. I mean, yeah, there's, the United States also makes deals with various unelected guys who haven't been, but is that really what we're supposed to be promoting here? And then you get the Hamas coming to power and then Israel saying, okay, well, these people elected these leaders, but we just refuse to deal with them on principle. Dictating all the terms of everything and controlling the entire framework that happens and being totally inflexible about it, and then throwing a tantrum if anyone says anything critical, which is why we don't actually talk about it that often on the show, because as Nate alluded to, especially around here, we're going to get all kinds of backlash for this, basically. So
I enjoy a good shouting match on this topic. Just it's been a little rare recently, so just trying to return to form, you know.
All right, well, we'll be back in just a second from ArsenalForDemocracy.com and WVUD.